And we're back in Fictional Frontiers. It's James Berardinelli time on Fictional Frontiers. James is the founder of RealViews.net. He is the best online film critic in America. And this is his Real Take segment with us. And I'm going to confess something right now, James, to our listeners. I'm actually in the garage recording this segment. And you and I have been talking about tornadoes. So that gives you a little reason why I'm kind of in the garage right now. I'm testing new equipment, but there was also an... ulterior motive here to, you know, lead me in this direction, so to speak. So I'm here and things seem to be doing okay. I'm looking out the window. It's getting a little bit more, I guess, a concern. I won't say concerning. I can see the wind blowing. And if you're scared of even the slightest wind, maybe you're freaking out by now. But you and I, before we got on, you gave me a nice overview that convinced me that I need to be ready to leave within a 15-minute notice, right?
Yeah, but I don't think we're talking, 15 minutes notice, but that 15 minutes notice is not going to come now.
Right. Not during the segment anyway, right? Yeah. Well, there is going to be a tornado of sorts coming this weekend around the country, and that's the release of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And I have not had a chance to see it, so I'm going to walk through James's review of the film to avoid spoilers as much as possible, because I want to be surprised by this as much as everyone else. I will say that the buzz on this film has been incredibly strong. I plan on seeing the film on Monday, actually, and I'm really looking forward to it, not simply because of the strong reviews, but because I've been a fan of the character for quite some time, and I just felt that there was this feeling that this was going to be in the spirit of something like a Black Panther that resonates so strongly with a lot of people. And it's not because of the lack of representation as far as the Marvel Cinematic Universe is concerned, but more importantly, I just felt that it gave off a very Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon type vibe, almost a hero type vibe. And, you know, we haven't seen that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a whole. And then when the reviews came out, the embargo lifted. Obviously, there was a social media embargo, and then there was the full embargo that lifted a couple days ago, and I'm still kind of confused by what people can get away with as far as the social media embargo is concerned, because obviously you're pretty much giving your real sense of what you thought about the film, whether you liked it or not. You know, a couple weeks ago, people were already talking about it. You had a chance to see the film. I actually read part of your review. I kind of skimmed and went to the bottom, and I was struck by your note that this actually gets you somewhat excited about what's to come in the MCU, correct? As far as characters are concerned.
I mean, first of all, I don't think it's a great movie.
Right, okay.
I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's on the same level as Black Panther.
Okay.
Although it's definitely trying to do similar things to what Black, in fact, I heard somebody say it's, somebody wrote that it was something like a failed copy of Black Panther.
Okay.
What I would say also, yes, the initial buzz on this film was incredible. It has fallen off a bit once the more serious critics have started to weigh in. So that's an example of the fact that the first people who saw it were handpicked to be people who would be enthusiastic about it. I mean, this whole business about generating, you know, positive voices, you know, vibes and all that stuff that's a science. It's fascinating the way all of this is done, how marketing is done now. If we can talk, maybe we'll get a chance to talk a little bit about the marketing for No Way Home. And I would love to, I hope somebody does either an expose or a documentary sometime next year about the guerrilla marketing campaign that went on, that's going along. It's sort of like a shadow campaign to the actual campaign. And I would love to know whether some of these rumors, none of which we know are going to be true or not true, whether the rumors were planted and seeded and cultivated by the studio, or whether they just are genuinely, you know, fanboy, fangirl things that have come to light. And I just find everything about No Way Home to be fascinating. Anyway, for Shang-Chi, I think the movie is interesting in that it is sort of an amalgamation of a martial arts film and a superhero movie. I think it starts out very strongly because it doesn't feel like a superhero movie. The first scene in the movie is actually a meet cute, like you would get in a romantic comedy. And I think the movie maintains that identity for about an hour and a half. And then it just sort of falls in line with what you expect from a superhero movie. You know, lots of CGI, big battle sequences, you know, magic, you know, all that kind of stuff, energy bolts, and, you know, all the, it, once you get past about the 90 minute mark, it starts to feel a lot more like stuff that we've gotten from, you know, the MCU in the past. And now what's interesting is we are in the process of a wholesale replacement of most of the Avengers. You know, Black Widow sort of provided a coda to the old Avengers. And now we're moving on to, you know, replacing, I guess, you know, we had one of the Marvel TV shows address the replacing of Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that Hawkeye is being replaced, I guess, in another TV show. we will be seeing Thor's being replaced next year. To the best of my knowledge, the only two previous Avengers who are going to be involved in the next iteration of Avengers are Hulk and Captain Marvel.
Mm. Well, Thor will be as well, right, for a bit. I mean, I know you say he's going to be replaced, but I think that Chris Hemsworth has said that he wants to be involved for the foreseeable future. So maybe he'll extend his run slightly. Maybe he'll take a back seat.
I don't know how they're going to handle it with Thor and Lady Thor.
Right. Well, I mean, and Natalie Portman, I don't know if she really, you know, again, wants to be so fully invested in the MCU. I mean, I don't know where she is in her career trajectory, but it seems
like
she
I don't think she wants to be involved at all.
Well,
I think she's doing this because she thinks it's important for, you know, just to you know, have another really strong female character.
Right, in the MCU, correct, right.
In the MCU. But I don't think this is something... She made it apparent that she's not... First of all, she's not making many movies at all.
That's
right
what I'm
now.
Saying, exactly, right. Mm-hmm.
Her interests lie beyond being in front of the camera.
Correct.
So maybe she's doing this to generate some money so that she can produce some smaller movies. You know, what George Lucas was originally going to do was he was going to, you know, make small movies. That was his, he said, after
correct.
He got done with the prequels, he's going to make the kind of movies he really wanted to make. That never happened, but I mean, that was kind of his idea. And I think that's Natalie Portman's idea that, you know, so maybe she will do more than one of these, but, you know, certainly if Hemsworth is willing and doesn't charge, you know, the other thing might be how much he's willing to charge, how much he wants to charge to appear. You know, one of the reasons that they're moving on from all of the original Avengers is there's the narrative purpose was driven by a financial one, because all of the original actors had essentially priced themselves out. You know, Robert Downey Jr. wanted exorbitant amounts of money if he was going to do more movies. Chris Evans, same thing. His salary demands were going up.
Can I make a point? I just want to make one point. This is completely off the beaten path here, but I wanted to make a comment about being priced out. I saw something very interesting that happened to a Turkish drama, and I've never seen this before. I want to get your take before we actually move on. There's a show called Uyanish Boyuk Selçuklu. It's about the Seljuk Empire. Okay, the first season did incredibly well in the ratings. It's the most expensive show in the history of Turkey. People fell in love with the cast. And it actually takes place with a particular ruler. It focuses on Melekşah. That's the name of the ruler, who took over from his father, Alp Arslan. Okay, I'm just giving you the context here because it's funny what happened. Or I don't know if it's funny, but it's interesting what happened. What happened is that when the negotiations came up for the second season, the show did so well, they did exactly what you said, you know, happens on many of these occasions. The cast that became much beloved wanted more money. And so what do you think happened? I'll tell you what happened. The Turkish network said, okay, thank you for your, you know, working on the show. Everyone's fired. So they got rid of the entire cast. And they said, we're going to go back in time and we're going to focus on Melekşah's father, Alp Arslan, instead. And so I had never, ever seen that in the history of any medium where a successful show of that caliber, after one season, because of, you know, evidently that's what the rumors were, the negotiations went the way you said with respect to the Avengers films. And instead of trying to work something out, they just fired the whole cast and said, okay, we've got the sets, we've got the costumes, we've got the infrastructure. We're just going to do a prequel instead. I mean, have you ever seen anything like that? I just want to get your take on that. Is that just, it shows you that things are done differently in different parts of the world, I guess, right?
Well, it does and it does. I mean, Star Trek The Next Generation is a perfect example of basically that happening.
Really? That happened that way? I didn't know that. Okay.
Because I think that the story goes that when Patrick Stewart and the most of the cast, when they signed on, they signed 7-year contracts.
I think it's the same with this show as well. They signed an extended contract, yeah.
And when they got to the end of the seventh, I think a few of them, maybe Patrick Stewart, signed shorter contracts, and then they re-upped, and it was expensive for them to re-up. But most of the cast members' contracts were expiring at the end of the seventh season. And Paramount just decided, we cannot afford to bring these characters back. Now, they had it in their back pocket. Okay, we want them to be in movies now. Mm-hmm. We want to transition the movies away from, you know, the old geriatrics. And, you know, now that, of course, I'm getting up to this age, well, they really weren't that old.
I feel you there. I definitely feel you
there. They were still in the prime of their life back in the undiscovered country, in geriatrics.
All you have to do is look at Tom Cruise, okay? If we look at Tom Cruise and we see what he does, then we're fine, right? I mean, he's in his late 50s, so he's young, we're young, right?
Yeah, he's older than I am, that's all I have to worry about.
exactly.
So anyway, they had this twin eye. So it wasn't an exact replica of the situation that you're talking about, but they did have, so they wanted to transition the next generation to movies, but they also had this thing where if they wanted to continue it on television, well, they really couldn't do it, but they did have Deep Space Nine going at that point. So they decided that, you know, for the immediate future, Deep Space Nine was going to be the Star Trek on TV, and they started Voyager a few years later, but the Next Generation was going to transition to films. But that's basically what they now had. The financial incentive not been there. Had everybody been willing to come back and sign just an extension to their current contract for the same salary, you might have seen a slightly different philosophy.
I'm sure.
And the Next Generation might have gone on for another year or two, and the Star Trek on the screen might have continued to be the old crew for another movie or two. Mm. So, you know.
So it does happen. It does happen.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, it's.
I think in the case of the Turkish drama, I think they had a contract for 6 or 7 years, but what happened is that the show was so dangerous as well. That was the other factor. A lot of people were getting hurt. And they said, listen, if we're going to continue, we want to get paid more. And the network balked. That's what happened. So, you know, again, these negotiations come into play, but it goes back to what you were saying with respect to the MCU. Is it worth having Hemsworth you know, extended, or at least one of the characters extended, you know, for a couple more years, his contract, that is. And that leads me back to Shang-Chi, because one of the things I've been hearing from so many people, and I think you mentioned this as well, the lead character of Shang-Chi, he's a character we can get behind. Now, I don't know if he has that leadership capability or role per se, because obviously when you're talking about Chris Evans, I mean, Captain America is the leader of leaders in the MCU, and then you've got Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark.
Well, yeah, the problem you run into here is the planned leader of the Avengers, unfortunately, died.
Right, right.
So they've had to recalibrate things, and we still don't know how they're going to handle the Black Panther side of things. But the character of Shang-Chi is not leadership quality on that level. I don't think that he can lead the Avengers.
What about Doctor Strange? And obviously this is leading into the No Way Home trailer as well. I mean,
I don't think Doctor Strange is going to be in the Avengers.
Okay, okay.
I think he's kind of got his own thing going, and, you know, it's not to mention, I mean, obviously. Now, we're going to get into minor spoiler territory here.
Okay.
For Shang-Chi.
Okay.
I say minor spoiler territory because I'm going to talk a little bit about who is in this movie.
Okay.
I'm not revealing, you know, any super secret cameos or stuff like that, which may or may not be in here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm revealing people whose names are in the cast list.
Okay.
Nevertheless, if you don't want to know anything about this movie, and I'm sorry, you can't close your ears.
So I'm toast, right? Okay. So
yeah, but
I'm a big
Wong,
boy.
Wong is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Strange is not.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Strange is not in the movie directly, but Wong is in it, and he's not directly involved. It's more of the nature, like I said, sort of reminding us that this is all taking place within the MCU. It's not some detached universe somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it does bring to mind the question of how, you know, how will Doctor Strange play into the entire MCU? I do not see him as being part of the Avengers.
Okay.
I don't recall whether he was ever part of it in the comic book, but the comic book had so many different iterations.
Yeah,
of,
I think every single MCU character, or not, I'm sorry, MC Marvel comic book character who was a hero ended up being in the Avengers at some point. Unfortunately,
was Conan in the Avengers?
Actually, you're not going to believe it. There's a comic series out that just premiered 2 years ago, I think. It's called The Savage Avengers, and Conan is on the Avengers. You're not going to believe it. He's actually on the Avengers.
Okay. I was, by the way, joking when I said that.
No. So even Conan has now been on the Avengers. So.
Back in the day when I collected comic books, my number one and the two comic books I always got every month were Conan and the Fantastic Four. I was less faithful when it came to things like Rom's Space Knight, and I think I have every issue of Rom's Space Knight. Also, I have every issue of Godzilla. There's a short Godzilla.
Yeah, still love that run.
Dum Dum Dugan, and actually that Godzilla was very connected with. Anyway, so but.
I think you're a little shocked by the Conan revelation.
Yeah, no, I completely lost my train of thought. But I do not think Doctor Strange in the MCU is going to be part of the Avengers. That's not that he may be in the Avengers movie, the next Avengers movie, but I don't think he's going to be officially a member of it. You know, we will obviously have the new Black Widow. We will have
the new Hawkeye. The new Hawkeye, because the new series is coming out towards the tail end of this year on Disney Plus.
We'll have the new Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll have a Thor or two Thors or.
Well, and there's a new Iron Man character, Ironheart, which is also going to be a television show. And you've got Ms. Marvel. So they're filling it with a lot of younger characters, and
Captain Marvel will still be back. And everything I've heard is that Hulk will be back.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know Tatiana Maslany is going to be playing She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the immediate plan is to bring her into the MCU.
Okay.
Although, you know, we could have Mark Ruffalo maybe making a guest appearance. Ruffalo is a very interesting guy.
Yes.
Because he would have no problem bouncing back and forth from movies to TV, and he's also probably the only member of that cast who doesn't really make the same kind of salary demands.
Correct.
He
right.
just basically says, give me whatever you're going to give me. You know, and that's the reason he apparently is going to continue, or Hulk will continue, for as long as Ruffalo is willing to do him.
Mm-hmm.
And
we also forgot Paul Rudd, too. There's Ant-Man as well. Ant-Man will be back maybe as well.
Yeah, well, and then there's been, off the beaten path, there's been talk about, this is not official MCU, but redoing The Incredible Hulk with a deep fake of Mark Ruffalo replacing Edward Norton.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't know about that, but I mean, that's the thing that's really interesting. I wish I could kind of, be a fly on the wall and see what Marvel's thinking, because we're talking about all these different characters, and yes, two of the critical characters who were the linchpins, actually three if you count Black Widow, they're off the game board, so to speak. But you still have a couple pieces left here, some nice bishops and, maybe a couple rooks and a couple knights, but where do you fit the Fantastic Four? You mentioned them earlier, one of your favorite books. My favorite book is FF.
Where do you fit the X-Men?
And the X-Men. Where do they come in? And then also, I want to talk about this in a moment as well. Where does Spider-Man fit into this? Because I think you were right on point when you were talking about the marketing campaign and how there should be a documentary about the guerrilla marketing campaign behind No Way Home. Because what's very clear is that Spider-Man is still one of the hottest IP out there. And the trailer itself exploded. It did better than the Endgame trailer.
I'm gonna speculate here about what's going to happen with Spider-Man.
Okay, because I know people are talking about him leaving the MCU. That's what some people are saying.
The relationship between Sony and Disney has not been good since they originally split up.
Mm-hmm.
But then they agreed to come back together for a couple more movies. But it's a relationship that I think both of them want to get out of now.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you think that's because the whole reason for them coming back is to kind of lay the this is what I think. I think it's to lay the foundations of the multiverse, right? So once you've established that, Spidey can go into his own Spider-Verse, and then the MCU characters can be in their own, and then they can bring the X-Men and the Fantastic Four into ours. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think what's going to happen in this film, one of two things will happen. One is that Spider-Man, and when I say Spider-Man, I'm referring to the Tom Holland Spider-Man, will end up trapped in another universe at the end of this movie.
Right.
No Way Home kind of would indicate that he's trapped there, and so he has to kind of make his way. Now, let's just use an example here of some Spider-Man's going to die in this movie. Let's say that they do in fact bring back Tobey Maguire. And Tobey Maguire dies in the movie. His version of Peter Parker dies heroically, of course.
One thing I want to say about the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, I went back and watched a lot of clips of Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. I know a lot of people love him. I did not realize how much whining was in his performance.
It has not aged well.
It's not aged well at all. No.
But anyway, so Tobey Maguire, he dies, and that I think is probably if he's in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not really sure he is, but if he's in the movie, that to me sounds like it's almost guaranteed to happen.
Okay.
Because I don't really, as an actor, he's not known as being a particularly likable guy.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
He's
not easy to work with, right, exactly.
Yeah, well, Jessica Chastain did a movie, Aaron Sorkin wrote or directed it a few years ago, Somebody's Game, I forget what it is. The actual title of it. It's about poker.
Okay.
And there's a really annoying character in there. full of himself and stuff. Supposedly, that's based on the Tobey Maguire. The idea that they would, if he's in it, he's in it to get killed, I think.
Okay.
And then Tom Holland.
And then Andrew Garfield as well, right?
Well, I don't know what Andrew Garfield would. He might actually survive it and just go back to his universe.
Right.
But and then Tom Holland would slide into the role of Peter Parker.
Mm.
Now, what remains to be seen is whether the characters actually think they look alike. I mean, we're seeing different actors, but it doesn't really make sense that Peter Parker would look physically that different in three separate universes.
Right. And there's also the question of Mary Jane and, you've got Zendaya playing Mary Jane here. Is she going to go over to the other side as well?
Apparently not, because she's not coming back. There's an issue of somebody having priced themselves out of these movies.
Mm, okay.
I think that, the Tom Holland Spider-Man is going to get stuck someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
He's either going to fill in Tobey Maguire's slot, or just some completely new. I mean, that's most likely what's going
to
happen.
Or he might choose to stay there because it's interesting. Remember in the last film, his secret identity was revealed. So maybe he feels for the safety of the people he cares about. This is the only place he can be, is in a place that doesn't know who he is.
The other possibility is that he gets killed.
Mm.
But we've introduced, he's dead. We've introduced the multiverse. There is actually some circumstantial evidence that might support that.
Mm.
Tom Holland, they got him real cheap initially because he wasn't particularly well known.
Mm.
Now he's a megastar.
Mm-hmm, correct.
If Sony wants to sign him to a 3-year deal, they're going to pay through the nose. Sony may prefer not to do that. They may decide, well, we don't want the MCU Spider-Man in our multiverse going forward. And they may, in fact, just retire Peter Parker.
Mm.
And they've got, there are plenty of other people who've played Spider-Man.
What do you think about the possibility of introducing Miles Morales into this film? Are we going to see a live-action version of...
No, I don't think we're going to see him in this. There's too much for this film to do.
Okay.
I do think, however, that the smart money is on this being the last Peter Parker Spider-Man movie.
Mm.
One way or another, regardless of what happens.
Okay.
And that the next Spider-Man movie will be a Miles Morales Spider-Man movie.
Mm. Mm. Do you think it has something to do with the fact that Tom Holland, and again, this is the same with the Harry Potter cast, is going to age himself out of the role if they're not going to want to keep him as a teen?
I don't know that that's so much the issue as it just is that I think there's a real feeling that they need to change it up to keep it invigorated.
See, I think they're going to keep him. I think they're going to work it up because I just feel like he is so much loved by fans around the world. I think people want to see how he's going to play with the Tom Hardy Venom. How is he going to interact with,
Jared
Leto Morbius. You know, they want to see him interact with those characters, the Sinister Six.
Well, but the problem is you just can't keep kicking the can down the road. There is a possibility that they might bring him back for one post-MCU movie to sort of pass the baton.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe a duology or something. But I do think there are going to be a film or a couple films with him. But I agree with you. I think that what you're going to see, and this kind of goes back to a conversation we had literally about a year ago, but I think what you're going to see is the separation of Sony from Marvel. But the door will always be open for him to make a cameo or come back. Because you've talked about this before. You ultimately think what we're going to see is the DC characters and the Marvel characters come together. So when you have the multiverse concept in both cinematic universes, it leads to all these possibilities, and people are not going to leave money at the table. That's what's ultimately going to happen with all these
things. I think with the problem you have here with Tom Holland, it's the William Shatner problem. In 1994, when they launched the Next Generation onto their movie career, they were a little bit nervous about it. So they decided they wanted to bring Captain Kirk in, you know, to pass the baton. But here's the problem. There was a new regime in charge of the Star Trek movies than had been there when Shatner last played Captain Kirk. Basically, the Next Generation people were now in charge. So it was William Shatner as Captain Kirk from the old guard, and all the Next Generation people, who actually some of them were fairly hostile toward the character of Captain Kirk. So they killed him. They killed him off and moved on. And Shatner, on several occasions since then, has expressed interest in reprising the role of Captain Kirk, maybe as a cameo or something like that. But he's always been too expensive. And so the feeling was, and I think this was voiced by J.J. Abrams or somebody recently, that the problem with bringing William Shatner back is you cannot have Captain Kirk in a small role because of Shatner's ego, I'm sure, but because of the size, the importance of Shatner as Kirk, he would have to be the biggest thing in the movie. And that just doesn't work, given the, first of all, the salary parameters that they're working under, and second of all, you know, given the fact that Star Trek has actually kind of moved on past William Shatner. Tom Holland has a similar issue, that once he's gone from the MCU, once he's been written out, however they decide to write him out, even if it's just a soft writing out, you know, he kind of goes into another universe where he goes and plays. Bringing him back, first of all, it would no longer be Kevin Feige, because there's no way Feige's going to be working on a non-MCU Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different creative team that would be, you know, writing the next, controlling the next Spider-Man movie. And they may not have the same feeling and handle that Feige had on the character. And then the idea that he might come back in the future for a cameo or something like that. It's the Shatner problem. You can't bring Tom Holland back in a cameo. And to a large extent, I think they have this problem. And this is the reason why I am not convinced we're going to see Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield in this movie. Because I think that they're too big and too much of a distraction.
You know, the problem, though, again, is something that probably the fans of Shang-Chi don't have to worry about, and the people moving ahead. So I want to go back to the film for a moment and talk about what I am most curious about. And since you've seen the film, I haven't. But as someone who's enjoyed the MCU films, I don't think they're great cinema by any stretch of the imagination. I think they're just like comic books. Although I'm a huge comic book fan, there's some that are classics. Most of them are disposable entertainment, and that's coming from a comic fan. Same with the MCU. Fun films, entertaining action sequences, you know, nice rapport between the characters, you know, some really nice moments that make you smile. But with Shang-Chi, the one thing that I've been wondering going in and asking myself, given the fact that I love so many of the Hong Kong martial arts films, Hero, a masterpiece, House of Flying Daggers, I'm drawing a blank here on some other ones. Obviously, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I'm trying to remember the last film that Jia Yi Mo did. Was it Shadow? I'm trying to remember the name of the film.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. Okay. Where am I? So does it live up to those standards at all?
No. Okay. But here's what's going on with the first half of the movie, first two thirds of the movie, is it does feel, it has kind of a martial arts movie vibe to it. And I'm sure that, you know, Michelle Yeoh and Tony Leung.
Yes. Tony Leung.
Yeah, those they have a great deal to do with it, you know.
And the film was Shadow, by the way. I just wanted to confirm it is Shadow, and that was an amazing film, but I digress. So you were saying...
The actual martial arts sequences, you know, you talked about the when Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon came out.
Or even Jackie Chan's Drunken Master 2, for example.
We're going to get to Jackie Chan in a second.
Okay.
When you talk about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, the term that you heard all the time was waifu.
Correct, waifu, yeah. Mm-hmm, the wire stuff, yep.
Well, what I would argue is that with this one, it's ifu.
Okay.
Electronic stuff.
Oh, okay.
CGI.
Have you coined that phrase yet? I think you need to maybe, you know, corner the market on that.
I did it in my review.
Okay. I'm going to start using it. You said ifu. I like that.
Ifu.
Okay.
It's, you know, using CGI to mimic incredible martial arts stunts.
Okay.
How well does it work? It almost seems a little too smooth.
Okay.
I mean, the CGI is generally well done. We're not talking, you know, Sam Raimi Spider-Man circa 2000.
What about the last part of Black Panther? Remember how dodgy that last third of...
But here's the other thing is, I loved the Jackie Chan stuff. The fact that he did all his own stunts.
Oh, yeah.
And got himself, you know, ended up in the hospital how many times. I love, you know, every Jackie fan almost loves the end credits more than the actual movie. You love seeing the outtakes where he... Where he gets, you know, sometimes very seriously injured.
And I still remember the first film I saw in the United States with him was Rumble in the Bronx. It has one of the greatest fighting sequences or action, you know, battle sequences in the history of movies where he fights those thugs in that pool hall, which is amazing. But yeah, the stunts are incredible.
There's something to be said for that kind of real, practical martial arts. And the waifu in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
That one was waifu. Correct,
They were still real people. I mean, they were using wires to, but I mean, there was no computer chicanery going on there.
Correct.
In this movie, there are a couple of really standout fight scenes.
Okay.
But you're never really sure what's real and what's done. I think I put it what's real and what's ones and zeros. Most people won't care.
Right.
They simply don't care. I mean, if it looks kind of like, yeah, it's people, it's kung fu. You know, what was it? Everybody use kung fu fight. And yeah, so, I mean, that's probably all they're looking for. You know, it's kung fu. Hi-ya! But for somebody like me who... Now, I don't claim to be a martial arts, you know, or a Bruce Lee or any of you. You are far more knowledgeable than I am. But I still kind of grew up on some of those films, and I know the difference between a Jackie Chan fight and the fights that I saw here. And it's a good, you have to be, a lot of the martial arts films were R-rated.
Yes.
Because those fights were brutal. Jackie Chan had the uniqueness of having PG-13 level fights. Some of this might have even been PG. Because he was not into that kind of brutality. And so that's essentially what the audience they're going for here. You know, when you've got John Wick out there doing, you know, R-rated stuff, you know, CGI, but I do think there's a synergy between a John Wick and this film. It just seems to me that, you know, a lot of people trying to make these comparisons with some of the great martial arts films are not, they've either not seen those martial arts films or they're not remembering them particularly well because the whole aesthetic is much different. Now, what you have in Shang-Chi is a different feel from the Marvel films. That much is definitely true. I don't think we've seen a lot of martial arts in any of the previous Marvel films.
Mm. Well, you know what the parameter for me is, or the metric for all this? Does it pass the, or does it meet the Lou Gall standard of being a solid martial arts film? What do you think Lou would say?
Too over the top, probably. There are two standout sequences in here. The bus and the skyscraper.
Okay.
I won't say anything more about them.
Okay. And
they are spectacular.
And one plug for Lou's book, by the way, and I remember he gave this to me about 20 years ago, The Fist That Shook the World, The Cinema of Bruce Lee. So we're talking about a Bruce Lee expert here.
Yeah. I'm not sure that Lou would be all that complimentary about that aspect.
Okay. Okay.
but, you know, you're talking about, you know, those two sequences are spectacular. Not necessarily because they're martial arts, but just the whole way they're choreographed and established. But a lot of the rest of the movie is somewhat generic.
Okay.
Outside of that, I enjoyed it. We just talked about that most of the MCU movies are solidly entertaining, but there are very few true classics.
Correct. Correct.
And this definitely fits into that solidly entertaining rubric. Now, we're going to talk about the other returning actor.
Okay.
Whose name is in the credits.
Okay.
I can't say whether he's been featured in trailers or not because I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. And I'm referring to Sir Ben Kingsley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, did you know that he was in this?
I heard that he was. And I think actually, if you go to Disney Plus, there was a short made that tied into his. It was like an extra on the Blu-ray for Iron Man 3. They've put that on Disney Plus. And I knew there was a reason for that because evidently he plays some role in this film.
Well, he plays the same role in this film that he played in Iron Man 3.
Oh, okay. Okay. The Mandarin.
Trevor somebody or other.
Oh, okay. Who played the Mandarin, right. Who was the fake Mandarin, right.
And he's been imprisoned by the true Mandarin.
Right.
Or he's I think he was in prison and he's broken out and meant to go serve the true Mandarin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the true Mandarin, who's the Tony Leung character.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't much care for the name the Mandarin.
Ah, okay.
He's had many alter egos over the course of his long life. He doesn't like the Mandarin. He says he doesn't like being named after an orange. but the remarkable thing about Ben Kingsley, and again, this is another way to remind us that we're in the MCU, and also I think it's been incorporated to sort of address some of the fan disaffection that occurred.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Mandarin would turn. I thought that was like a brilliant twist, but mm-hmm. you know, that's just me. I thought that was probably the only good thing about Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, there was an interesting scene with Iron Man saving all the passengers who jumped out of that airplane. I guess that was maybe over the top, but that was the only other thing I remember.
Yeah,
in all of Iron Man.
Don't even remember that one. Okay. but I think this is in there to sort of address some of those issues. But
hopefully they'll do that with the Taskmaster character as well, because I was very disappointed, and I think a lot of people were at the portrayal of the Taskmaster in the Black Widow film. That was a complete disaster.
Yes, but the interesting thing, well, here, I mean, Ben Kingsley is not in any way, shape, or form playing the Mandarin.
Right, right.
He's playing Trevor Slattery or whatever the heck is the actor's name was.
Well, let me ask you this. Where do you put him as far as the history of the last 30, 40 years of film, as far as versatility, as far as accomplishments?
Well, he actually did something in this film that surprised me.
Even after all these years, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He is the comic relief in this movie.
So would you say Sir Ben Kingsley is one of the best actors we've seen the last 40 years?
Yes. He's also one of the most egotistical, but yes, he is.
Oh, is he? Is he? Okay, I did not know that. Okay.
If you ever interview Ben Kingsley,
Have you interviewed him? Have you interviewed him before?
I have not interviewed him, okay. But I've talked to people who have.
Okay.
You do not look him in the eye.
Okay.
He does not like that. And you always address him as Sir Ben.
Okay.
You do not forget the sir.
Mm.
He has a knighthood.
Mm-hmm.
And you must use it.
Okay.
If you're in the room with him. He has a towering ego.
Mm.
But, you know, unlike many people that have towering egos, he's actually, you can almost say he's earned it.
Mm.
Gandhi. I mean, you can just go through the list.
Right, right.
I don't recall any movie, though, where he's been so openly comedic.
Mm.
There have been some where his roles have been tinged with comedy, but they've never been quite so fatuous as this one here. I found it very interesting.
What do you think about these actors like Sir Ben Kingsley? I'm going to call him Sir now because you've scared me. He might, you know, call it at some point.
Yeah.
But, you know, and again, going even to the Eternals film or Eternals, what is it about all of the quote-unquote A-list actors wanting to be part of the MCU? Is that just something we're going to keep seeing from now on? What do you think?
Maybe it's like Harry Potter, where almost every established British actor wanted to get a role in Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them didn't. I think there's a lot of that going on here.
Is it because of the kids? They have kids and they want their kids to be excited?
There's some of that. There's just also some of the sense of, you know, they want to be part of the whole thing.
Okay. Okay.
They see it as being, you know, another part of their legacy, and that they can appear in these popcorn films and it won't tarnish. You know, this is an opportunity for them to reach another generation and to be remembered for a little differently. I think it was a little bit of, Alec Guinness had a chip on his shoulder about Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He hated that.
Nevertheless, he still did the other two.
That is true. I wonder if it comes down to, when it comes down to negotiating the contracts, whether the fact that they want to be in these films, they do it at like a friends and family rate instead. What do you think? Or do you think they have to get paid a lot typically to be in these films?
I think my guess is that Alec Guinness probably got paid a lot.
Sir Ben, for example? I mean, do you think he paid?
I don't know. With Sir Ben, it's very strange because I have absolutely no idea what motivates him.
Hmm.
With Alec Guinness, I think the bottom line is that he thought Star Wars was very silly. But I don't think he hated it per se. What he disliked is that there were so many young people who just associated with him with Star Wars.
That was it.
Yeah. As opposed to all this long career that he had.
Bridge on the River Kwai. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Smiley and actually, that might come after Star Wars. But I don't know, when was Smiley's people? When was that? Because he did that TV adaptation. But anyway, so his problem was that people didn't recognize him for the other work that he did. But
right.
He didn't. He recognized, I think, by the end that Obi-Wan was going to be a part of his legacy, and that it had in fact brought him to the attention of many people who otherwise would not have known him or known of him.
Well, you spoke to William Shatner. What do you think? Did he embrace the Kirk character completely? Did he love the character? Does he still love the character?
Shatner's relationship with Kirk is a little bit like Leonard Nimoy's relationship with Spock.
Okay.
Although Shatner never disavowed Kirk openly, he was for a period very critical of fandom and the way that Kirk, the importance that Kirk had taken. I mean, it was for him a role.
Okay.
And he got paid for it.
Of course.
And as long as they were going to pay him to play Kirk, he'd go play Kirk. Now, toward the end, and especially after Generations came out, he became much more in tune with fandom. Maybe it's age. Maybe it's the fact that he looked back on it and saw that, well, it wasn't so bad after all. But I would say that he didn't have the same kind of friction that that Guinness or Leonard Nimoy for a while had with having played that role. He never considered giving it up, Shatner, that is, as long as they paid him.
So, James, as we head out, when you look at Shang-Chi and you look at what's ahead for you as far as watching these films, I mean, we've talked about this before. Are you on a 1 to 10 scale, 10 being the most excited about where it's going, 1 not really that interested in where the MCU is going? Before Shang-Chi, what was your rating, and what's your rating afterwards as we head out?
Well, I have a near-term and a far-term thing.
Okay.
I'm still not that interested near-term.
So would you say maybe 2 or 3?
Yeah,
or something?
I mean, I'm not. The Eternals just doesn't get the pulse, you know, going. I mean, it's,
and not
it's,
not a new Thor either, and not the other
no,
stuff.
No, not so much. I want to see how the arc develops. That to me is what's interesting. I like I'm kind of done with superhero movies in general.
Mm.
They've kind of reached a place where they don't really work with me, you know, as standalone entities. But you get stuff like Infinity War, and that worked. Mm-hmm. I don't think Endgame worked so well because I thought a lot of that was, you know, silly and, undid some of the great things that were done in Infinity War. But so I want to see what this arc is. And is it a worthy arc?
Okay.
I mean, obviously by worthy, I'm thinking one thing, but... And I don't think I'm the only one that's thinking that one thing.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the X-Men and Fantastic Four coming in, right?
Well, I'm talking about who the next villain is going to be.
Okay, so you're thinking Galactus is what you're thinking. That's what you want to see, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see how it could be anybody else.
Well, it's funny. I'm sure you were not aware of this, but Hasbro, they do a crowdfunding type of campaigning once in a while. They have this thing called Hasbro Pulse. And the latest figure that they had, and the reason they do this is because they can't get the retailers to bite on this because it's way too expensive. They did a new Galactus figure. They're manufacturing one. If it met a certain number sales-wise, they were going to go ahead and mass produce. I think they had to have, if I'm not mistaken, I think either 14,000 or 16,000 pre-orders. And the figure was $400. Obviously, I didn't buy it. But I have to admit, as a Galactus and Fantastic Four fan, I thought about it. I thought long and hard, but I said no, not at this stage of life. But what they ended up doing was having a pre-order number of about 26,000 to 28,000. So that shows you that there's a lot of demand for this character. And you know Marvel already even before this. Not that this has any role, but there's a demand for a real, true-to-the-spirit version of Galactus. So I think that we're going to see him. The question is when. I mean, I know Loki has introduced the character of Kang, the Conqueror, so maybe that's the transition to this. But the long game, like you're talking about, is the Fantastic Four, Doctor Doom, and Galactus. This is the middle chapter in a trilogy, if you will. And I'm not saying the middle chapters are bad. I mean, The Two Towers was a fantastic middle chapter. But I really want to get to the Return of the King. You know what I mean? So I'm with you. I find like these films are going to be interesting. They'll pass the time, but I really want to see where they're going ultimately and where they're going to end up. I mean, this phase, I almost feels like is a transition phase for this, you know, for the whole franchise. It's not, you know, something that we're going to look back and say, okay, this was incredibly strong standing on its own. I think it's just going to be leading from phase one to the final phase. And I think after that, I don't know where they're going to go. I think, you know, as much as people don't want to believe it, I think that the superhero films are going to go the way of something like the Westerns. I think people are going to have their fill of it, and there's going to be fatigue that's going to set in at that point. for me, again, it all leads to FF. It all leads to FF and Galactus. And, you know, maybe next week or the week after, once I've had a chance to watch the film, we'll talk about this. And I also want to talk about some of the other films I've had a chance to watch over the last couple of weeks as well. I actually also want to talk about Dune. I want to talk about Dune, and, you know, that's pretty much around the corner if you really think about it. Where you are as far as expectations are concerned, we'll save that for next week because I want to kind of leave that to a fuller discussion because, you know, Frank Herbert's Dune, that's one of the giants, right? So we want to see what's expected of that film. And James, I guess we'll catch you in 2 weeks. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about a lot more, and then we'll see where we stand on all this.
Okay.
James Baronelli, the founder of RealViews.net, the best online film critic in America. And me, looking outside as it gets darker and darker. Let's hope I'll be back next week.